Hendrix.
Yes, Dad?
Have you ever seen a commie drink a glass of water?
Well, yeah, I can't say I have, Jack.
Vodka. That's what they drink, isn't it? Never water.
Well, I believe that's what they drink, Jack, yes.
On no account will a commie ever drink water, and not without good reason.
Yes. I can't quite see what you're getting at, Jack.
Water. That's what I'm getting at, water. Mandrake, water is the source of all life. 7/10 of this Earth's surface is water. Why, do you realize that 70% of you is water?
Oh, God.
And as human beings, you and I need fresh, pure water to replenish our precious bodily fluids.
Yes.
Are you beginning to understand?
Yes.
Mandrake. Mandrake, have you never wondered why I drink only distilled water or rainwater and only pure grain alcohol?
Well, it did occur to me, Jack, yes.
Have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation? Fluoridation of water?
Yes, I have heard of that, Jack, yes. Yes.
Well, do you know what it is?
No. No, I don't know what it is now.
Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face?
Mandrake. Realize that in addition to fluoridating water, where there are studies underway to fluoridate salt, flour, fruit juices, soup, sugar, milk, ice cream, Mandrake, children's ice cream.
Good.
Welcome back to Through the Aftermath. This is episode number 51. We are back once again after that epic episode 50. We had to take a break after that. We just had to let it settle in, you know, just let it...
True. After talking to Brian Fargo, I was like, okay, I'm done. I can die now. I'll be in my trailer.
We actually all did die, and then now we're back. So
it's true. The radiation, we were brought back to life. We don't know how.
Yeah.
We were reanimated. It did.
So what are we going to do in this episode? I have a main topic. It's not an interview. It's actually a main topic, a movie. We talked about this before, how we want to kind of focus on movies and do little, you know, kind of reviews for post-apocalyptic movies. So this one, we're going to talk about Dr. Strangelove.
That's right. This is one where, you know what, all the time we've been doing these movies, or talking about these movies and books, this is one that's always been in my list because it's one of those movies that is like the quintessential dark comedy, and it is up there as probably one of the funniest shows that deals with this kind of thing and still is kind of a comedy in its own right. That if we didn't do it, I think that if we did die and the radiation hadn't brought us back, that hell would be open only for us, and we would have been drawn down just like on Ghost. These things would have come out of the ground and dragged us screaming to it. Stanley Kubrick may have done that himself, but it seemed like it was only right to talk about this one next.
Yeah, and this is actually timely too, because we're approaching the end of the year, and next year, well, 2014 will be 50 years since this movie came out. Can you believe
that? That's right. It's been 50 years. Oh my gosh, it has been.
That's crazy. Well, why don't you talk, just kind of a basic overview of what this movie's about.
Yeah, here's the basic overview, and again, you know, we're going to go ahead and talk about it. We usually at this point we'd be like, there might be spoilers. We're just going to kind of go from the cuff here. We may be talking about spoilers. To be honest, if you're listening to the show and you haven't seen this movie, I just like to start by saying shame on you, because like, really, wow. I mean, that's like, you know what? I probably shouldn't say that because I still haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life, and I'm not kidding. No, hold on. I know I can hear people out there going, your heaven, you
do
know?
You have the TV off during Christmas? Is that
you know? I'm the one who ends up watching It's a Wonderful Life in French, like on Home Alone. I don't know. It's one of those shows that's just kind of always on, but I've never really watched it. And it took me. I don't know how that happened. I think it was because my dad had a television where you changed the channel with pliers. But you know, that's okay. You know, it gave more time for reading and everything else. But this is one of those movies, and I consider it probably one of the funniest movies done out there. And it's tricky to explain because there's a lot of people out there that are like, yeah, it's pretty funny. But you have to understand this movie is funny because it hits you in levels. Like if you've ever, I compare it to the show, and I don't know if you've seen this. There's a show on Netflix called Portlandia. The first time I watched that show, I was kind of like, oh, it's got the guy from Saturday Night Live. Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then as I watched it, it started to dawn on me later how ingeniously written it was, because it's subtle. It kind of creeps in a little bit, and then all of a sudden it hits you why it's so funny. Well, this movie is very much the same way, because what it is Kubrick taking the movie Red Alert and basically using the Cold War fear that was going on at the time and put together this ingeniously written movie parody of everything that was going on at the time. And what he does is he does it so well that every line you hear in its own form is kind of like its own comedy, because every little line is deliberate. Even the things, the names of the people and things that they say, everything is there as kind of a parody of what was going on at the time. And the gist of the story is that there's this Air Force Brigadier General, his name is General Ripper, who all of a sudden just goes completely bonkers because he's absolutely convinced that the Russians are trying to kill America using fluoridation of water, which brings laughter every time I hear his lines. He actually orders his B-52 bomber wing to go and attack their Russian targets. And because of the way that it works, everybody goes radio silent and they can't respond just on the fear that the bombers could be compromised if the radios are working a certain way. And so basically he sends them to go kill their targets, knowing that they're going to strike back and nobody can do anything about it. And what is happening is it's told from three different points of view. One being Colonel Ripper, who's going completely insane, and he's with this Group Captain Colonel Mandrake, who's a British RAF officer who's there on exchange, who's done by Peter Sellers. And Peter Sellers, my God, this guy's a freaking genius. And if you've ever seen the Pink Panther movies, the older ones, not the ones that are new that I have to apologize for, but he actually plays three parts in this movie, but he plays this Colonel Mandrake. But then on top of that, you have the president in the war room, who's trying to coordinate with his group, including this General Turgidson, who is George C. Scott, and probably the funniest scenes I've ever seen him do. And then the third group is seeing from the point of view of this B-52 bomber that does make it on its way to its target. And if you have ever seen anybody parody somebody riding the bomb like it's a rodeo horse as it falls, you are seeing this movie, because this movie has made its way into like the everyday jokes anybody does nowadays. But basically it's this back and forth of as they try to stop this B-52 wing from destroying everybody, and it just gets funnier and funnier as it goes.
Yeah, and that scene with him, it's Slim Pickens is the
actor. Right.
And I don't know if anyone here is old enough to remember, you know, the old Westerns and everything, but he was a kind of a slapstick comedy, like a silly, you know, 60s, 50s, actually, yeah, mostly 50s, Western actor.
And Apple was, Dumpling Gang,
yeah,
in fact.
Exactly. And he kind of did this, you know, goofy kind of character. And so they put him in this movie to, you know, to be that, that character. They wanted a Texas accent, which I think is funny because, you know, that could be debatable whether it was actually Texas. But he actually is from Texas, so I think it is. But they were going to make Peter Sellers play a fourth role, and he was going to play that role of Kong, King Kong, they call him, the pilot who Slim Pickens played. But anyway, the at the end there, where he's riding the bomb, I actually have a T-shirt of the Fallout Boy riding that bomb and waving his hat in the air, his cowboy hat in the air. And I never made that connection before. Like, I got that shirt. My wife bought it for me for my birthday one time, and I never made the shirt. And someone said to me, I forgot who it was, they were like, oh, that's like in that movie with Slim Pickens. And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's like, I don't know why I never, because it's, like you said, it's like one of the most popular, you know, it's almost like a meme, you know, for the riding the bomb into, you know, into the end of the world. And I missed it. So that was awesome. But yeah, I have this shirt now. And so now I know I can proudly wear it and remember what it's from.
Well, that's the thing. There is elements from this movie that have become such a popular part of pop culture that we didn't even notice that we were doing them. I mean, you can't even play an online game that you get to pick your nose art for something without noting that one of them is probably going to be either a chick or some goofball guy riding a bomb down. And it's become so part of what we do. It's like, we didn't even think twice about it. But what makes this movie such a gem is you've got Peter Sellers playing, you know, he's playing this RAF, officer, but he's also playing the president, and he's playing it like totally straightforward. Like, you don't even recognize him. He's President Muffley. And what's funny is, I guess he was supposed to originally have a cold when they did the show, but everybody on the set was laughing so hard when he improvised that he had to actually tone it down. And I guess that happened a lot. Like, there's places where you can tell it's cut because they could not stop laughing. And if you watch close, there's this one scene where he also plays Dr. Strangelove, and there's this one scene where Dr. Strangelove is pounding on his arm, and you can see one of the Russian guys who's in the room with him, just, he loses it. You can tell he's busting out laughing. He can't hold it. And that's the part that is the best part, is he plays this character, Dr. Strangelove, who is supposed to be an ex-Nazi scientist who we brought over thanks to Operation Paperclip, which is when we went around after World War II and grabbed a hold of these guys so the Russians couldn't get them to be able to work for us and do research for us. And so it's funny how much he's a part of pop culture. I mean, right down to the black gloves and his little wheelchair and his thick German accent. And he plays these characters. I guess he ad-libbed like so much of it that they said he had Kubrick laughing so hard he was in tears at times.
I believe it. It's, and you know, it's funny because I watched this again. I think the first time I watched it, I was probably pretty young, and this is the first time I've seen it in a long time. And it was like at the very beginning, you know, I start watching it, and I'm like, I don't, you know, I know this is supposed to be funny, but where's the funny part? And then you just, like, all you have to do is see Peter Sellers. I mean, he was in the very first scene, but all you have to do is see him, you know, and you're like, oh, okay. Like, it's going to be funny now. You know, this is Peter Sellers. But one thing I thought was interesting was George C. Scott's character, the general, I read this in Wikipedia. I never knew this before, but according to Wikipedia, there's a note saying that Kubrick actually used outtakes from George C. Scott's performance, where he said, you know, do this like off the wall, like, you know, a way that you would never do it. Do it as silly as possible and just be goofy. And so George C. Scott would do it. And then he's like, yeah, I won't use that take.
But, oh, he was so pissed too.
Yeah. And he used all these really goofy takes where he was just acting like acting really silly. And and George C. Scott said he'll never work with Kubrick again. Which is funny, but
which is funny because in the end, it's funny. George C. Scott later in his life actually made the comment that looking back, it's actually one of his favorite performances. Like the scene where he's getting so goofballish, he actually trips and falls and does this roll and stands back up. I guess the trip on the behind the scenes on the trip when he trips and falls, he really did that, and he stood right back up because he was so in character, and he did it so perfect that Kubrick actually thought that was what he was doing. And didn't realize that he really tripped and fell, but you watch him, and I'm not kidding, like, and we're talking, this is the guy who played General Patton in the movie Patton, and this guy, and I still consider this part that he played probably one of the single funniest roles I have ever seen him do, because he's so dead on, and the way he does his facial gestures and like the fact that he's kind of slapping his stomach at parts, and you know, when he talks to his secretary, who, you know, happens to be the girl on the front of the Playboy magazine, and she's like, he's like telling her, "Don't worry, I'll be home in a little while, don't worry," you know, and then he's like, "Oh, don't forget to say your prayers." I mean, it's like these lines he was delivering were just exact.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, just the way that all that played together, as far as, you know, you see the serious actor and you're like, okay, you know, he's going to be funny. Like, this guy, George C. Scott, is going to be funny in this movie, but yeah, he is. And, but I think Slim Pickens was kind of and Peter Sellers were both the kind of anchors of comedy. You know, they were kind of bringing it around to be that. It's called a dark comedy, you know, because it's not an obvious comedy. And it has a lot of things in it where you're like, where it's actually a pretty serious story, you know? And I think that, that mixture of those characters, which you know, like I said, you know, those are comedic actors, mixed with this somber, you know, this plot where it's like, this is really, like, they're really in a pickle here. You know, it's like you were describing the movie itself. You know, they're flying out there. They're in this B-52 bomber and there's nothing they can do. Nothing. Their communication is broken. But they can't, they're ordered not to listen to anyone. If someone tells them not to do this, they can't listen to them. So they go through all the procedures to get the bomb set up, and they know it's not a drill. They're told it's not a drill. They have to do this, and then they have to cut all communications and just go for it. And so it's like, you know what? And you start thinking, like, what if this really happened? Now, that was 50 years ago. We have a lot more, you know, in place to kind of secure against something like that. But, it's one of those interesting things where it's like one guy decided that he didn't like the Russians because he thought that they were, you know, poisoning us with fluoride, and it could be the end of the world. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you take that side of it, get away from the comedy of it, and it's actually pretty scary to think about.
Well, and it actually scared them into a response, because it's funny how much movies really do bring, you know, out, it they can bring change. You know, you look at the movie The Day After, and when, you know, when Reagan was president and he was talking to Gorbachev, and you know, the wall kind of came down there. I remember there was that comment that Reagan had made to the director of The Day After and said, "Don't you think for a second that your movie wasn't a part of why this happened?" What was funny was, after this movie came out, the Air Force actually had to not only restructure, but actually convince the public that there was going to be these fail safes, because there were holes in the system that they had never thought of. And it's funny that it took a parody to really bring that out. I mean, they absolutely hated Kubrick for doing it, but I mean, the stuff that he was hitting on, I mean, the jokes that they came up with, like they even had a name for Discriminator. That's what it was called. And it was funny. They actually named these things and came up with these ideas that the thing was only going to, like, respond to certain codes. And meanwhile, the guy who has the codes, you know, the RAF officer can't get him to say it because he's gone so absolutely crazy that he's just going, like, I mean, he's yelling, he's got his own guy shooting at his own guys, and he's yelling, like, "Grab a gun, the redcoats are coming," and, you know, opening a golf bag and pulling out a 50 caliber machine gun. And it's this poor guy, RAF officer, can't get through to the president to give him the codes because he doesn't have any change. And then he makes the other officer blow up the Coke machine, you know, which he won't do, because if you do that, you're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company, which was funny because as soon as I saw him, did you pick up who that was? You remember the absent-minded professor?
Yeah.
The original? He was the rich dad of the kid he was the one who got the flubber on his shoes, and he was bouncing up and down, and they couldn't get him to come down.
Oh.
And he was like freaking out, and they had to jump on him to get him to stop. And his son was the one that was playing the basketball game.
Oh, yeah.
That was him. And as soon as I saw him, I'm like, it's the guy from Flubber. I mean, it was just like, this movie just had levels of people in it that, I mean, James Earl Jones,
yeah,
was his first time ever being on film.
Yeah.
He'd done Shakespeare up until then, but, it is definitely the movie that put Slim Pickens on the map, as like everybody knew who he was after that one. And he didn't even know that the movie was a comedy. They only let him do the lines that he was going to say. So he did it as straight arrow as he could.
Yeah.
And then even when he came on the set, they were like, "Oh, you know, look at him. He's wearing the cowboy hat. He's already in character. And they're like, no, that's how he is.
That's just him, yeah.
That's just him. And he, yeah, I love that. I love the idea that he had no idea and that it was like, you know, and there, one of the interesting things too is, you probably saw this when, if you look at the Wikipedia, there is a lot of times in this movie, there's places that were real close to when, JFK was assassinated and they had to actually change quite a bit.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Where he mentioned about Dallas.
Yeah, he said a person could have a lot of fun in Dallas because he was labeling all the stuff that they have in their survival kits. And yeah. When Slim Pickens says that, and he actually had to change it to Vegas. But if you look, his lips are actually saying Dallas.
Yeah.
And who would have known that like a week before the movie came out that JFK was going to get assassinated? They even changed the ending. There was an original ending of the movie where they were going to have this goofball pie fight at the end in slow motion. Like that was supposed to symbolize the bombs. And the missiles going around the world, and it got so comedy-like that it didn't work. But one of the things that was ad-libbed in was George C. Scott added this line where when the president gets hit full on, and it actually knocked him down. And George C. Scott stood up and said, our president has been cut down in his prime, and creepy. You know, like a week before the movie comes out, they actually had to cut that scene because it's like, whoa, wait a second here. You know, like, who would have known? But
that's weird how they do that. Like I remember, you know, I read some of that and I was like, I wonder if they would do that these days. But they actually did. Was it Spider-Man that came out right after 9/11?
Yeah, there was a few movies.
Yeah, they had to take out the towers out of the movie or something like that. I mean, that's
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, there's been a few that they had to change it up and yeah. But yeah, absolutely amazing part. I mean, one of the funniest things that I think is the best is just when you watch how Peter Sellers and Peter Sellers, my God, like in real life, I guess he was kind of like, yeah, my understanding is he was he was so into his characters that he had a hard time off camera he kept saying that he was having depression because he was so into his characters that being off camera, he wasn't a very nice person to be around. I mean, poor man had been divorced a couple times but he still holds a candle as probably one of the funniest actors out there. And his performance as Dr. Strangelove, I mean, you watch how he does it, and that guy, when he performs, you can tell where he's ad-libbing stuff and adding stuff in, like even the glove. The black glove that he wore was ad-libbed in because he saw Kubrick using them to lift lights, to pick up the lights because they were so hot. And he recognized the application there because in the movie Metropolis, that old silent film, that's what the mad scientist wore was black gloves. And so he saw that link and grabbed it. So his, you know, his left hand, which has a mind of its own, that's how you can tell it's kind of like, you know, that's the hand that he uses that's kind of like his own different hand that's not – he's not controlling it. And it's funny how many movies have taken that and added it in as, you know, that's what makes him a nefarious, evil, mad scientist. It's been played off in just like everything.
One thing that that really kind of threw me is at the end, at the very end – this isn't giving any spoilers away or anything, but he stands up and he says, "Mein Führer, I can walk." Like, what was that?
what it was basically, my God, the guy was just, it was almost like he had just gone like totally over the top, because that line was completely ad-libbed in, and it was kind of like what you got at the end was this mishmash of the fact that they couldn't use the pie fight scene, and he just, like, it was almost like at the very end, he just kind of went off on his own tangent, and it was so over the top that they just ran with it. And then I guess it was actually Peter Sellers, before he was, you know, when he was first became popular, he was on a show called The Goon Show with Spike Milligan, and this is the show that would later that the guys from Monty Python watched and later would mimic when they made Monty Python's Flying Circus. So these guys are the precursor to them. And Spike Milligan is actually the one who suggested at the very end, well, if you guys don't have a very good ending for it, why not do that, you know, "We'll Meet Again" song and use clips of like bombs blowing up, and that's what they ended up doing. And so what you get is this ridiculous ending where it's almost like they're sort of saying that the world has just lost it because they've just gotten done talking about, very intently listening about how Dr. Strangelove is telling them that they could go to these underground bunkers and like stay down there for 100 years, and you know, there'd be one man for every 10 women. And of course, you know, General Buck Turgidson's just getting excited, "Oh, hey, all right," you know, and you could just tell that everybody's like, even the Russian guy is like, you know, "You have a very good idea," you know, and he was so goofballish that it was just like they'd all lost their minds by that time. And I it's kind of like open to interpretation, but I liked that the fact that it was almost like everything had just gone surreal at the end.
Yeah. It definitely was.
Yeah, it was almost like you could tell that there was a little more they could have done, but with what they had, I guess there was a lot of cutting and pasting with those scenes with Dr. Strangelove, because behind the scenes, I guess he was just, people were dying from laughter because he was just making this stuff up as he went. And you know that, like, one of the things that they were saying is that there's this misunderstanding that Dr. Strangelove was supposed to be Henry Kissinger at the time, who at the time was, you know, politically involved and, you know, with Nixon and everything. And it's actually that he created it based on, Herman Kahn, who was a mathematician at the time. And then Wernher von Braun, who, you know, was part of the rocket development program for the Nazis, and then later, of course, would help us, you know, get to the moon. But he mishmashed all these guys together, and then to make him the way he did, where he's just got this dumb smirk the whole time, and there's these parts when he'll come wheeling up on his wheelchair, and he'll just do these, you know, kind of like just laughs, and you're like, where did this guy come up with this?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then to have it where he's kind of like reaching into his pocket to get his calculator, and then he realizes his other hand has it, and he's like, oh, you know, and then he almost stops, like, oh, and then he reaches up and then pulls it out of his other hand, and then just kind of starts punching it to get it to go back to what it was doing. And it was like, all this must have been like completely from the cuff, you know, no pun intended, from the cuff, you know. But man, it was enough that it was, his character has been like parodied in like everything. Including the mod that is coming out soon. Most people don't realize this. Sean and I don't really talk about the bunker that we're transmitting from, but we actually have in our bunker here, you wonder our day-to-day operations. In this, you know, future episode, we'll have to talk about this. But one of the things that we have Mr. Handy Robot, we call Dr. Strangelove, and you'll have to wait till you see the mod to figure out what this is all about. But, you know, he's been programmed to act very much like the one in the movie. So if you haven't seen the movie, you'll want to see it for that reason alone. Foreshadowing? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So I can't wait to show you what I did with that. The way that he did the voice, I mean, it was just like... I mean, it was just so perfect, you know, and then he plays the president so deadpan. I mean, he's just almost like, why, this is ridiculous, you know, and then he's like, it was a perfect blend of these characters, and then they have that RAF officer almost be like this perfect stereotype RAF officer, where the whole time he's trying to get this, he's trying to get Ripper to kind of come down from being crazy, and Ripper just kind of keeps coming up to him, and he gets right into him. You can tell he's uncomfortable, and he's kind of doing this, you know, like Ripper's all in his face telling him that, you know, the Russians are here to take our precious life, bodily fluids. And I mean, you can't buy that kind of lines. I mean, it's just dead on.
I think one of my favorite lines was when, I think it was the Russian guy and somebody else were fighting, and he says, "You can't fight in here. This is the war room."
That there is a couple of them, and that is probably the number one, because that one, that gets me every time. The other one that I think is the funniest set of lines, and he did this all from shooting from the hip on this one, was when the president is talking to the Russian president, and he's like, you're fine, and I'm fine. Dmitri, turn down the music. And he's just like, of course I'm upset, Dmitri. No, I'm just capable of being as upset as you are. Okay, we're both upset then, Dmitri. And you could just tell that this, you're like, well, stop crying. No, can you turn down the music? I mean, it was just ridiculous. And you could just tell that, like, there was this comedy behind it. Like, you know, the fact that, Buck Turgidson, you know, the general, he's like, you can't let that guy in here, that Russian guy. He'll see all of our secrets. He'll see the big board. And he's like pointing at the big glowing board behind him that, you know, is recognizable in everything from, you know, war games to you name it. I mean, it's become the quintessential what's happening at the operations in the United States and Russia at that moment, you know. You'll see the big board.
The big board.
Oh, man. Just some even the way he talks to the president, you know, when the president's like, you know, it's obviously he's a psychopath. And you're like, oh, we want to hold off judgment on that till all the facts are in, I think.
Yeah. So I think that if this is something that, you know, one of the listeners, any of the listeners haven't seen before, definitely check it out. Do you know, like, you gave me a copy of it. Is it available on YouTube? Do you know?
You know, I don't know if it's available on YouTube. I know that they re-released it. It's a tricky one to get a hold of. You almost have to buy kind of the Kubrick collection, but I think it's been recently re-released. I know about 5 years ago they re-released it on DVD, and that's when I got a hold of it. And I got a hold of it with the rest of the Kubrick collection because, you know, Kubrick, you know, he's a mad genius. You know, he still made one of the scariest movies I've ever seen, The Shining. But
oh, yeah.
That's another story. But that's probably the best way to get a hold of it. I'm sure if you get onto YouTube, though, there's going to be either these movie clips or, you know, there's a lot of parodies that people have done. But I know movieclips.com has a lot of them on there. Just some of the funniest scenes of all.
Okay.
Oh, man. I mean, line for line, if you it's one of those movies you have to watch once and then go back and watch again. And this time listen to every single line they say, because there's jokes in there that are like, they're so kind of played so well, you almost miss that they're there. Like when he was talking to the, you know, when the general's talking to one of the cabinet members, and he's like, he makes this comment that that Strangelove doesn't sound like, you know, a German name. And the guy's actually like, well, actually his name used to be McVertigib, and which translates, of course, to Strangelove, you know, in a roundabout way. And so you get these lines that even the simple stuff where, you know, where they talk about the Russians didn't want to lose the arms race or the peace race. And it almost takes you a second to go, wait, the peace race? And then at the very end, when they're talking about the mine shafts and, you know, what happens if the Russians have more people saved than we do? We don't want to have a mine shaft gap. You know, and it just takes you a minute to realize that how ingenious some of these lines are, you know, and it's worth it alone just for Peter Sellers. I mean, him right there, my God. I mean, I think they were nominated for like a ton of awards for this. And funny enough, he was actually nominated for more than one award for playing more than one character. I think he was best, he was like the best actor and supporting actor or something like that. But, my gosh, yeah, it's a must see for sure.
And I could talk all day about Kubrick. Like I kind of grew up with Kubrick, and I didn't even really realize it. Like I watched Clockwork Orange when I was pretty young, probably too young to watch something like that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But my parents were huge fans of that. And I watched it when I was really young. And then, Full Metal Jacket was probably my favorite movie in high school and probably college also. Like I just watched it constantly, and I didn't really even make that connection that it's the same guy. You know, like there's a scene actually in Dr. Strangelove, you know, when the troops come and they go to attack, before he pulls a 50 cal out of his bag, those troops are coming and the camera's kind of following behind them. And it's a really nice cinematography, you know, where they're running behind and they're
almost like this field cam, like somebody is documenting it.
And I'm watching that and I'm like, that is Kubrick in Full Metal Jacket. There's a whole, part of the movie. You saw that, right?
Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah. There's a whole part of the movie when they're approaching, they're in kind of more of an urban, warfare area, and they're approaching this building where there's a sniper, and it's the same type of, you know, the camera's running behind the guys as they take cover and as they switch cover back and forth. And I'm just like, he used that again. Like, he used that again in Full Metal Jacket, you know, 23 years later, you know, I mean, I thought that was amazing, that it's such a little signature thing. And you really have to see it to know what I'm talking about, but, the way he does these movies is just so incredible. And it's not like, you know, growing up in the 80s and 70s, there were, you know, three or four iconic directors, you know, and it's not like now where there are 20 of them and they're not, you know, the iconic part is questionable, but back then it was like, you know, you had these guys who were just amazing and it was for this reason. And every single movie they touch turned to gold, you know, or it was gold when they made it, you know, Kubrick is definitely one of those. And just his range, you know, from, like you said, The Shining to even like Lolita, you know, he did before this one.
Yeah.
And that
also
was actually,
Peter Sellers.
Yeah. Another Peter Sellers movie. I mean, that it's not to the spectrum side of The Shining and any of those scary movies, even Full Metal Jacket, you know, but, And then he did like Eyes Wide Shut, which I didn't like that movie, but I know.
Well, he's a mad genius. I've actually had friends who said that, like, how can he be a mad genius? Did you see Eyes Wide Shut? And I'm like, that's true, but you know what? I will never see New Year's Eve Masks the same ever again. That's, and that includes BioShock. And so, and plus, you know, and Nicole Kidman, my, nobody's eyes were shut. But, you know, the thing about him is he still, and I know that Stephen King, like, loathes the original Shining just because of the changes he did in the story, but I still consider, you know, visually, The Shining to be one of the scariest movies ever because of attention to detail that Kubrick would have. And I guess on this one, he was doing so many takes that, like, Slim Pickens was, you know, he actually wanted Slim Pickens to be in another movie later on, and he was going to actually play the character that Scatman Crothers plays in The Shining. Oh. And so Slim Pickens actually said, the only stipulation is it has to be less than 100 takes. And so the guy who was his agent actually was the agent for Scatman Crothers and said, you know what, I'm going to give it to him instead. And of course, Scatman Crothers, you know, goes off and makes movie history with his character alone. Yeah. But I guess even Peter Sellers, he was convinced Peter Sellers, every time they did a new take, he got better and better and better. And Peter Sellers, meanwhile, is going, why is he making me redo this? I thought I did a good job, you know? And, but he was relentless. I mean, and that's what made him this mad genius and why this movie was perfect for him, because he would see detail to things right down to how absolutely ridiculous the names are of each of these guys. I mean, it just kind of has, you know, its own political statement, but it's more of like a parody.
Yeah.
But you could tell that the Air Force must have just been climbing the walls about it. I mean, but the characters, I mean, Dr. Strangelove, I mean, the idea that, like, you know, we didn't know about the Doomsday Device because it's, you know, they were going to explain it at the next party because he likes the Russian prime minister loves her. I said prime minister. Somebody's going to shoot me for that one. He actually likes surprises, you know, like, why didn't you tell the world? You know, I mean, he was just ticked off, you know.
Yeah.
Mein Führer, Mr. President. Yeah. And his hand would just shoot up. My kids laugh out loud every time I do that. Like, I'll be sitting there at, like, the dinner table. Like, everybody will be quiet because we don't sit around the dinner table because we all have ADD and we like television. But if we do, that's one of the things that I'll do out of nowhere. I'll just flip my head up and go, nah! And my kids will just start dying. So that's why my parents don't have Thanksgiving. Yeah. But an incredible movie. I mean, especially, I mean, the guy who plays General Ripper. I mean, the guy, the way he plays his character as he goes completely mad, probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen. The fact that he's absolutely appalled that fluoridation, you know, they're putting this in ice cream, Mandrake, children's ice cream. And then Mandrake is like, Lord Jack, I don't know what to say that. You know, do you know when fluoridation began? I mean, it was just exact. But everybody has to see that movie. It's one of those, if you like post-apocalyptic, you have to give that one a chance just because it became the stereotype for everyone else ever.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain movies that if you get into post-apocalyptic, into the genre, into that type, you know, if you're like, hey, I think, you know, I like this movie I saw, I think I'm going to watch more of those. I mean, you have to start back at movies like this. You know, you have to really realize, like you're saying, to really realize where a lot of these references come from later on.
Yeah, that's right. And there's so many in there, you almost miss it because we take it for granted nowadays because we've been raised with these stereotypes already in place. I mean, most of us grew up with Mad Max and we don't even think twice. And yet nowadays we go, wait a minute, we don't realize that this is where a lot of these came from, is these early movies that set the stage on this. I mean, just the lines that they use, because it's so tied into every movie nowadays, right down to, you know, the mad scientist character having the big poofy hair and the big huge smile, like he's lost his marbles in there somewhere, you know. I mean, but the way he played his character, oh my gosh, just the, like, you know, it would not be difficult, man, Mr. President. I can't wait to show you guys the mod. Oh, I can't wait.
Well, let's go ahead and kind of get into that. We skipped talking about what we've been up to at the beginning.
True that. That's true.
But we could still do that. This would be our segue. Cause I think we've covered, Dr. Strangelove. And I think if we've enticed people enough that if they want to see the movie, again, hopefully, then they can go check it out. But so let's talk about the mod then. We'll talk about kind of what we're up to and we'll start off with the mod.
Yeah, so as you guys well know, I dropped off of the planet for about a year. Not even joking. In fact, the other day I came outside and I looked up at this horrible, like, this horrible day moon that was annoying me to death. And I was like, what is this giant orb in the sky? And somebody said, that's the sun. And I was like, what is this? You know, and I didn't like it. And I went back into the bunker. But no, what's been happening, of course, is we're to 2 years now. So we are officially at crunch time, as I call it. So where we're at right now is after 2 years of getting good at this stuff and then learning how the mod worked and then finally putting us all together, we are at what is definitely the 11th hour. And the goal right now is we have this kind of personal goal that, you know, obviously people in their lives juggle multiple things and they try to get stuff done and they play a game here and watch a show here. Well, I'm at this mode where this month, to the end of November, I am like 100% just trying to do just the mod only because I'm so close that I just want to finish it and play it. And, you know, that was my goal all along, was try to do what I could before Christmas. But we are to the point now where we are actually, the mod is for the most part pretty much all there. And we are recording all the dialogue. A lot of it was there, but a lot of the final stuff, you know, detail stuff, like the fact that Sean and I are characters. You can actually be companion characters. It's funny when I say that at work, people are like, what? I'm like, no, like they fight with you. Nah. But, yeah, I didn't program that in yet. I think that's a perk. But yeah, what it is basically, you know, a lot of the dialogue that you have is we do these things. And, it's funny how the missions that you do that was originally supposed to be this little mini mission that instigates the whole idea of having there be an Aftermath radio turned into this insane amount of exploration. Like, I don't even want to surmise right now how big it is compared to the real Fallout New Vegas world, because it's the area of Barstow is so big that it's almost like intimidating. But and if I stop to think about it being just me, it'll scare me. But yeah, long story short, we're going to see what we can do here in this next month. Me and Sean are actually going to continue to record stuff, you know, later this week, and then separately as the time goes on here. But if you listen to the very beginning here, the intro sequence, you know, this is the time for everybody in the community to kind of help out. This is a perfect time, like it said, for us to be able to get some pieces from you guys, you know, whether it's commercials or if you just want to be sending in a little wave file of you saying, you know, you're listening to Aftermath Radio. You know, something like that. This is where we're plugging all this stuff in, because the functionality, it's all there, but now we're plugging in the real sound files into where before there was just placeholder stuff. But it's pretty remarkable. You actually get to, there's like, not only is there like achievements, you know how like in Fallout New Vegas, you have the achievements where if you kill 50 guys with the grenade, you know, that was something they had kind of added. You actually have achievements for this too, but not only does it become your player home and you get to be part of the Aftermath studio, but you get to help us create this museum add-on that we find pieces of that we are like, hey, we ought to make a museum of Aftermath. And you actually have to go around the world finding these different elements that'll add on to it. And then on top of that, we decide, and this isn't a spoiler, this is just kind of cool for you to know, we decide that there is actually, the way we're going to be able to do this is with a casino to be able to fund a lot of what we're doing on the radio station. And so we actually have kind of an Aftermath casino, which, and that's all I'll tell you right now. But there is a lot of, oh my gosh, I don't even want to think about, like, if I have an Easter egg list of how many inside jokes are in this, it would be like 500 things long. I mean, there's jokes from lines we said, there's jokes from people for the community that Dale will love. And I've tried to make it where I've listed it at the end, you'll have every reference, be able to kind of reference it. But the whole plan of this was because, you know, in the process of doing my own game development and, you know, the slight slowdown of when I got my Oculus Rift, which, oh my God, by the way, the Oculus Rift. Oh. But yeah, that was the point. This was supposed to be the test bed in that, and my chance to kind of give back to the community. And, you know, 2 years later, which seems frightening now that I say that out loud, but it's cool to be able to finally come to you guys and go, yeah, I think we're almost there.
Yeah, and you promised end of the year. You promised that in blood.
You know what? And I'm hoping that if this does, you know, if it something does go wrong, and see, here's where I'm scared. I'm like, I keep having this horrible pit in my stomach that I'm going to have it all exact and then hand it to somebody, and somebody's going to go, it crashed, you know. And what I've done and why it's taken so long is, of course, having to learn what makes things crash. Why does the mod do this? I've gotten to the point where I've gotten so good with the GEC, I can see, you know, original stuff where I'm going, why did they do that? You know, like places where I can tell if I go back to Fallout 3, I can tell why the radio station didn't work at all in places. But there's even like scripted sequences where you get to see like the day the bombs fell and things like that. We touched on that, you know, in past episodes. But my gosh, if it comes together, it'll be the perfect grand finale to all of what we've done here. And it's cool because, you know, and we actually kind of mentioned this in the game, but we actually make the comment that even after our show one day doesn't continue, this will. And so it's a way of kind of having our show be part of your life, you know, for as long as you want, because, I mean, you get to use it as a player home and have the radio station. And I will say that I do recommend – Sean's going to love this because he just finished Fallout New Vegas for the second time. But you probably will want to play it with a brand new character just because – first of all, it'll be interesting to see how stable or unstable it'll be anyway, but the fact that there's so much that happens in it as your character progresses that it would be fun to kind of see everybody play it from the beginning. But my gosh, I can't wait to see what everybody thinks. Like, there's nothing like learning Photoshop, a 3D Studio Max, you know, Google SketchUp, everything, you know, and all these programs, like 10 different programs, all within a year and a half. I think I kind of did. I don't know if you ever played the Nayrim mod for Oblivion.
No.
That's a mod made by a very small team out of Germany. Incredible, but they're kind of the inspiration. But it goes to show that sometimes you get a one man team that knows what they're doing. Well, Minecraft, for example. You know, you get a one man team who knows what they're trying to accomplish, and no one can stop them except for the GEC when it sucks. But. And of course, we'll have a release episode. I mean, you'll know. Yeah. You're going to see. Like I said, I disappeared off the planet on purpose. You know, I was actually going to release info up until now and change my mind just because I said, you know what, let's wait until it's time. And we're just about there. So we'll see what happens in the next month. And you know, 1 month from now, we'll probably have to record something because it's part, you know, the third post-apocalyptic Christmas carols. We got to come up with something.
Oh yeah, that's true.
But. But enough about me. I mean, Sean, you've had a lot going on.
Well, yeah, a little bit. Let's see.
You make it sound so simple.
I'm trying to think. Last time we recorded, I think was July, June.
Yeah,
July?
I think it was. It was July.
Yeah. So I mean, I think the big thing post-apocalyptic related was Dragon Con, and I always talk about it every year. You know, because it's such a, it's a fan, you know, convention. It's just fans getting together, and one whole track is devoted to post-apocalyptic. And, I think it's growing each year, you know, and I try to attend as many of the panels as I can and all that. But one of the big fun things that I did this year was I was in the Dragon Con parade for the first time ever. And
wow.
in costume, which was kind of a dream of mine, you know, several years ago when I first saw it. And, you know, I was pretty late to the Dragon Con party. It wasn't until I moved to Chattanooga, which is only 2 hours away, that I really started going to Dragon Con. And so it was probably 2007, I think. So it's when I saw that parade, I said, that is incredible. Like, it's just, you know, people dressing up and just walking around in, you know, in the parade. So I had the costume a couple years ago that I made. I think it was 2008 or maybe, no, it was like maybe 2010. And I know I showed it and I had a picture of it in the, through the Aftermath, show notes back then. Well, I took that. I didn't go to Dragon Con the last couple of years because we kept having babies. But this year I went, with some friends and I took that costume and I kind of rebuilt it and I made it, pretty crazy looking. I made these dreadlocks out of this yarn and I made like more blood all over it and just more pieces, more bones and fur.
Dude, you were the guy on that Van Damme movie, Cyborg, the one who's like, I love this world. Dude, that guy scared me. You were that guy.
I was. You know what's really crazy about it? I just have to get this out of the way first. A lot of the bones and fur were from my own animals that I've raised myself. That if you're still listening after I say that,
I was going to say, okay, now you're Universal Soldier and Dolph Lundgren. I don't know where this is going. No, I was kidding.
But even feathers. I had feathers from chickens that I raised.
That's awesome.
I'm a huge, huge believer in using everything. You know, it's kind of like a Native American, thing, a tradition of using every little part. Well, I've been doing that, except the funny part is I use it for costumes. So, well, I guess they did too, kind of. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But so... I had this, you know, just crazy, like, my inspiration was kind of like a Chota, you know, in Fallen Earth, they have this tribal, Chota faction. It was kind of a Chota mixed with, just like a crazy, I guess Mad Max, more Mad Max mixed with the Chota, I guess. So it's kind of like Native American Mad Max. And I made this axe, this like, it's kind of like a halberd. I made the blade out of foam. And I started getting really big into foam, like EVA foam, which is this, it's basically floor matting. You can get it super cheap and you can make anything out of it. You can bend it. If you heat it up, you can bend it and it'll stay. And so a lot of costumers use this EVA foam. So I was making, making this axe out of that. And I might have even talked about that before in the show. I don't remember. But, because I made the axe first. I made it a long time ago. So anyway, I got all this together. I had these chains hanging from me, and I had I had this gun. I made this pistol. I made a holster out of a leather purse that I bought at Goodwill for like $2. And I did that, you know, on purpose, because you can find some incredible stuff at Goodwill that to use in costuming. You know, these purses are leather with like studs in them already.
Oh yeah.
And you can just buy it for $2 and you can rip it apart and make some really cool stuff out of it. So I made this holster, with this belt and all this stuff. And so what happened was I went into I went to the parade route, because that's where you're supposed to meet up to go to the parade. And every year before that, I've chickened out. You know, I've always been like, my costume isn't good enough. You know, I don't know where to go. I don't know. So this year I'm like, I'm just going to do it. And I go to the parade route, the beginning, there's a little map in the booklet and it tells where to go. So I go there with a friend of mine, and I'm like, cause she kind of had to help me walk there, because my face was covered. I had these goggles on and stuff. And so I get there, and they're like, yeah, you had to pre-register several months ago, and we're sold out. We're sold out of slots for the parade. And I'm like, what? Like, I didn't even think about that. That didn't even cross my mind. So we're sitting there, and this friend of mine is very outgoing, where I'm not at all. Like, I was literally like, oh, okay, well, you know. Tough luck. And she's like, no, we gotta get you in here. So she's going around asking people, hey, do you have, cause they put wristbands on you if you were pre-registered to be in the parade. So she's going around asking people, hey, do you have an extra wristband? And people are like, no, sorry. She asked the second people she asked, they were like, yeah, we have this friend who isn't going to come. He, you know, he might have a wristband, so, you know, you could do that. So we're waiting for the friend. The friend never showed up, and she's like, you know what? I'm just going to go ask somebody else. So she literally goes around the corner, down the block, comes back 5 minutes later, says, here you go. Here's a wristband. And I'm like, how did you do that? And she's like, don't ask. I'm like, okay, that's none of my business.
In true Raider form.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if we hear sirens, I'll run, but okay. So I get in the parade, and I'm walking up where the staging area is, and I knew that every year they had this Mad Max, about five or six guys that were dressed in Mad Max gear. And there was a guy that was dressed as Lord Humongous, and they had a car that was exactly like Lord Humongous' car, and he would go and he would use his PA system, and he would be like, you know, just leave the oil, walk away, you know, and he would do all that, the whole spiel he would do. So I'm looking for these guys, and I see him, and I'm like, okay, cool, this is the post-apocalyptic area, I'm gonna walk with these guys. So I'm standing there, and it turns out because of the pre-registration, I guess, I'm not sure, these guys were actually a group that kind of convened on Facebook, and they got together and they planned out the costumes from the movie, from Road Warrior. They're Road Warrior specific. There was, you know, Warrior Woman, and there was Max, and there was the helicopter guy. I forgot his name. And then there was Lord Humongous, and then there was the Toady, the guy who, you know, does the announcing, mm-hmm. Announcement for him and all that stuff. And I'm looking at him going, these guys are really coordinated. Like, they coordinated this, all of this Road Warrior stuff. And I kind of felt like I'm in the wrong spot. You know what I mean? So I'm kind of looking around and I'm like, maybe there's a general post-apocalyptic area that I missed. So I'm walking around and I don't see anybody. There's no other post-apocalyptic. There's a couple Fallout, you know, Brotherhood of Steel guys, but, you know, I was way out of place with them. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go back to the Mad Max guys. So I'm standing by them. We're getting ready and everything. This is like an hour before the parade starts. And I'm just really feeling awkward because I'm like, I am just like, you know, I didn't do this right. And I just knew it, you know. But they didn't really say anything to me because I think they were kind of thinking the same thing. But we went through the parade. It was a lot of fun. I was walking behind the vehicle because I didn't want to be right up there with them and make them feel awkward. So I was kind of walking behind. And there's a couple videos out there on YouTube that I've found that show me on there walking behind them, which is kind of fun. But I was waving the axe around and I'm walking back and forth and it was such an adrenaline rush. You know, I had the mask on. So, you know, when you have a mask on, it's kind of like you can do whatever you want and nobody's going to know who you are. Like, there are not going to be any pictures later that that will incriminate you, you know. So I can kind of do. So I'm like waving this axe around. I'm like roaring and, you know, pointing the axe at the crowd and everything. I'm really getting people pumped up, and it was a lot of fun. And it was one of the greatest experiences. You know, it's something that it's like you have to do this if you're into this type of thing, you know. And it really kind of sold me on doing this more, you know, maybe next year, year after that or something like that. Well, anyway, that was over. That was a lot of fun. Then I get home and I start looking for, you know, I decide, well, people are coordinating these groups. I'm going to get into one of these groups now, you know, for next year. So I'm going to start getting ready now. So I start looking for, I want to dress as one of the G.I. Joe dreadnoughts. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
the Cobra dreadnoughts. So I'm like, I wonder if someone has started a group for the Cobra Dreadnoughts. So I start looking for pictures of which dreadnought I want to dress up as and which costume I want to make and all this stuff. And so I find this group on Facebook who it's called, like, you know, Dreadnoughts Dragon Con 2014. And I'm like, well, there you go. These guys are coordinating. Turns out it's the exact same people who set up the Mad Max one. It's the same guys who were in the Mad Max one. So it's kind of a coincidence. So I emailed the guy. I'm like, hey, can I be in your dreadnought group? You know, I want to be one of the dreadnoughts and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, sure. And then I kind of was like, maybe I should tell him that I was the guy behind him, you know, at the last parade. So I tell him, and he's like, oh, that was you. He's like, I felt bad because I didn't say anything to you, you know. So anyway, he was being really nice about it. And he was, you know, we kind of both were being worried that we were going to be awkward, you know.
He's like, leave the costume.
Yeah. But he was like, yeah, that was a really cool costume. And I was like, yeah, you know, it was my first parade. I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't know that there was pre-registration and, you know, all that stuff. So anyway, great end of the story is that I'm going to be in the parade again next year, hopefully, if all this, you know, sets up, and I'm going to be a dreadnought from you know, which is kind of post-apocalyptic. You know, they were, you know, kind of the post-apocalyptic biker dudes. So I'm really excited about that. And also I am going to be another Mad Max character with those same guys too. They're doing another Road Warrior set. And, I picked a guy because they're like, you can pick whoever you want, but all the main characters are already taken.
Okay.
So I picked one of the guys in Lord Humongous' gang. And you'd probably recognize him if you saw him, but he has like a red mohawk. And, actually, most of them look like Wes anyway, you know, with the red mohawk.
Yeah.
But this guy just had goggles and like a, you know, what are those, football, shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And, he's just one of the guys that's in the background, but I thought he looked really cool. So it's going to be kind of cool because it's going to be a lot more people, I think, this time. So it's almost going to be all of Humongous' gang in the parade. You know,
dude, that's going to be crazy looking.
Yeah, it's going to be like accurate, you know, movie accurate. So I think that'll be a lot of fun.
There's going to be like tears and stuff. You're going to be like, and then he's going to be like holding you and going, "We have all lost someone we love." You have to post it on Facebook. Some of these links to these YouTube videos.
Yeah, I'll find a good one that has a nice video. I know that I saw one that had me for a couple seconds there. And you know what I kind of realized is that my costume was really disturbing. I mean, it was like blood all over it and like the bones hanging everywhere. And like, you know, so I think I noticed that a lot of people didn't really record that part. Like yeah. they kind of were doing all the superheroes and, you know, and the friendly costumes, and they kind of cut out the Mad Max part, and then a lot of people cut out. There's a horror part where there were people that were dressed up like zombie, like not, you know, wimpy zombies, but like flesh rotting zombies, you know, with like bones sticking out, and that was cool. But a lot of people, you know, skipped them in their videos, mm-hmm. and I guess I don't know, maybe they were scared. I don't know. Maybe their kids were going to watch it later. I don't know. But so I noticed a lot of videos cut out the whole Mad Max part. So there are only a few that I found out there. But I'm gonna find one. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I can't wait to see what you do with it, man. That sounds like that's cool though. You've taken it to like the next level. You're like yeah. Mad Max. I can be Mad Max.
Yeah. It's something that I never thought I would have been doing. You know, if you asked me 5 years ago. If I was going to be dressing up as, you know, people and walking in a parade, but here I am.
Yeah. Well, at least it makes a lot more sense than when I'm actually like talking about the mod and grouping with my own character. And the way I explain it is that I enjoy nothing better than going off to Barstow and playing with myself. And then people go, "What?" And I'm like, "I'm sorry, I probably should have worded that a whole lot better." But yes, you know, pretty soon everybody will play with myself. What?
No. Yeah. Oh man.
Good but, times.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the big thing, I guess, in the last couple of months. I've been getting back into. We were talking about this before. I had to play Fallout New Vegas again. I had to beat it again, and then I've gotten back into Fallen Earth for probably the fifth time. You know?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like I don't back think, and forth.
I never quite left that game. That's my game that I sort of dabble with, you know, whenever I get the chance.
Yeah, it's so much fun, and it's so gorgeous. Like. I know a lot of people, it's a very specific game, you know, if you're used to like regular MMOs that don't have AI problems and you know, don't have a lot of weird bugs, then you're probably, you know, this game is going to turn you off, but it's, I overlook all that just because of all the other great stuff I love about it. But yeah, so I've been playing that again. I got into another, clan and, see how they work out, you know, but because the original clan I was playing with, they all pretty much stopped playing it.
Yeah.
That happens.
Oh, that's a great game, man. Especially, yeah now that I've upgraded my computer even like more recent, it's funny that game, when you want to really crank up a lot of the special effects on it, how gorgeous it really can get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've added a lot too in the last few years. All the bloom and the sunsets have always been amazing. But
oh, my gosh, yeah.
I was looking at it today, actually, because I'm writing a article about it for Massively, and there I was taking some screenshots and I'm looking at it going, that thing, that mountain I see way in the background, like I know that I can get there, like I can get to that mountain, like all this stuff around me, I can get to it, you know, and it's amazing, like it's a draw distance thing, but it's also just playability. It's not, there's not a set, you know, around you. It's like you can go anywhere, and it's, I don't know. I love that.
Yeah,
so much.
It's a perfect sandbox.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much all I've been up to. You know, and another thing I want to mention too is, you know, before we cut this out or before we end the show, is we have some ideas already for the next few episodes. You mentioned the one as kind of a, you know, announcement for the release of the mod, and I would like to do one on, we have another movie. Should we say what movie it is? get people psyched.
Yeah, well, actually, yeah. Let's. Why don't we go ahead and tell them what it is? Because if you get a chance, you've got to see if you can watch this movie beforehand. It's like a homework assignment, only not, because that sounds like it's work. But yeah, it's actually a lesser known film. If you guys have ever seen a cartoon called The Snowman, and it's kind of a mishmash of hand drawn art and chalk art, but it uses kind of elements of real life models and things like that. The same group did a kind of a lesser known film called When the Wind Blows, and it's basically a post-apocalyptic story from the point of view of this older couple in England, and just an absolute gem of both animation and story and the voice acting, for that matter. I mean, it'll warm your heart and ice it completely over at the end. So incredible movie, it is another one of those kind of parody, not parody per se, but kind of like warm-hearted over a very cold subject, but if you see what you can do to I want to say that it should be on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah,
if it's
it
not it yeah and it should be yeah. So that's one you definitely need to watch next. That's one we wanted to talk about, just because the elements that it deals with are just so diverse. So
I actually you sent me that movie too. You actually sent me the German version, so I
The German version?
Yeah, you sent me the German. I watched like 15 minutes of it, and I'm like waiting for subtitles, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm supposed to find the.
Dude, I don't remember it because I ripped it from a DVD. Is it possible that it's like that you actually go into your player's? It may be embedded. I wonder if you need to go into your player and change it to English, because that would almost make me start laughing. Speaking of like It's a Wonderful Life in French. I wonder if that's what it is, because I don't remember ripping it like there being more than one choice. But when I sent it to Sean, it was one of those, okay, you have to watch this. But you might want to go in and see if there is not just a subtitle, but like an actual language choice you can change it to.
Well, I just looked it up on YouTube, though, and I watched it there. They have the full version in English on YouTube.
Yeah, in non-German.
Yes, in non-German.
Mein Fehler? Okay. Yeah, no, it's that, and it is. You, as you well know, it is kind of a gem all by itself.
Because
it's just, it's hard to explain until you see it. You really do have to kind of watch it, because it just has this wonderful lightheartedness to it. And I love The Snowman that they did. But, we'll have to talk about that one for sure.
Yeah, and I hate to be blasphemous, but I actually like this more than Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you. Well, Dr. Strangelove is kind of, it's in a category of its own.
Yeah.
I mean, like when people kind of classify the different Mad Maxes, and yet there are those that were like talking about it like, how dare you say Return of the Jedi isn't the best? You got that kind of thing going on, and that's one of those where we just embrace it. We embrace all religions and groups in every way. So.
Yes.
We don't make somebody stay back just because they have feathers on their costume. Lord Humongous brings them on board and they join the parade. So yes. you really were a Chota. That's funny. The more I think about it, like Fallen Earth, I'm just like making the link. Like, oh, okay. That's probably what brought you back to Fallen Earth again.
Yeah. So we have that to look forward to, and then I want to do an episode on like there are dozens and dozens of post-apocalyptic short films on YouTube. And if you just, what I did is I started searching for them. Actually, I saw one, I started searching for other ones, and I'm like, there are so many of these. I just want to watch them. They're not more than 10 minutes, maybe not even that, each one of them. And I just want to watch all these and kind of Jonathan and I maybe go through, I'll pick out maybe my top 20, or somewhere around there, and then maybe we'll both pick out like a top 10, and then we'll talk about those. But I want to try to watch every single one I can, which is maybe a little impossible. But since they're so short, I can watch a lot of them. But there are some really, really good ones out there, and I want to keep it. There are some dystopian ones, there are some sci-fi. They're called post-apocalyptic, but they're not, and we can get into all that. But I want to keep it to ruined Earth kind of, no spaceships, no clean, nothing is clean, dirty, gritty, post-apocalyptic. And so I'm going to be picking out those. We'll do an episode on that, probably our top 10, maybe top 5, and maybe 5, because that way we could talk more deeply about each one. But I think that would be a good idea for an episode.
I know. Everybody out there's like, man, I told you they weren't going to be done doing these shows. And my response back would be, it's what we do. I mean, sometimes we were killed. Well, you know, at that time we were thinking that, and then when we got brought back by the radiation, we didn't have full control. Like my left hand it has a mind of its own. Wait, now we're back to the John playing lips. It's one of those things that, you know, it's funny things happen and you never know where you're going to end up.
And three episodes, that could be the next 5 years. You know?
Yeah, it's true. At the rate we're going, the world will have destroyed itself and we'll be talking about present day. So, which is, now we're back to the mod. you will hear from us shortly from one side or another for sure.
Yeah. So, let's go ahead and wrap this episode up. All of the contact information you will need, I have forgotten. So you'll have to look on at throughtheaftermath.com or throughtheaftermath.blogspot.com, and you'll find in the show notes there, it'll have all our contact information. We have the Twitter, Facebook, email to contact us. And, you know, like we said, we're still here. You know, so you can still email us and let us know how you're doing. And if you're an old-time listener or a new listener, we actually have a lot of new listeners on the Facebook group. That might just be the best way to keep in contact with us is the Facebook group because, I'll get an email as soon as if someone posts in there. I'll get an email right away, and so I'll jump in there and see, you know, what's what people are talking about. And it seems to be the most, the most active.
Skynet can't touch us there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's too big.
So it's
Heaven knows he tried.
so we have that. If you want to keep in contact, and then like we said, we have some ideas for some future shows. So all is not lost.
Absolutely not. You know, stay alive out there. We don't just say it; we live it. Well, no, because we died. Now, stay alive, still out there again.